Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 41, and I'm Livia, your host. And this week, we have returning guests.
I'm Tom from LA. Merry Christmas.
Marcia, also from Los Angeles. Happy Hanukkah and Gunzer's Ascendance.
Okay. I have no idea what that
means. I'm not sure what that one is.
It's a Buffyism.
Okay.
Okay. And I watched Buffy, and I don't know what that means either.
And I saw one too.
All right. Anyway, let's move on to the news. I have...
lots of again, news.
Bad news, which is that Stargate Universe has been canceled just when it was getting good. Even though I didn't really love the last couple minutes of the finale, I still would have, you know, liked more. It wasn't a series finale by any stretch.
You've got the 10 more episodes of season 2 coming up.
Oh, I that's what we were arguing about. We were like, yeah, is it over?
That's 2.0 finale. You got 2.5 left.
Okay, fine. Well, I seriously doubt it's still a series finale because they had no idea that they were canceled when they shot it. So, boo on sci-fi.
You know, I'm sorry. I think the whole show was a misguided attempt to Battlestar Galactica-ize.
I know.
The Stargate franchise. And you can't alienate the core tone of... I mean, Stargate has always been, for lack of better words, fun.
Fun, that's true.
And SGU was never fun.
Don't get me
started on Coherent.
Okay, I will agree with you on that, because I'm a huge fan of the original Stargate. However, I will say that one of the things, as the show went on, it got sillier and sillier and sillier to the point I couldn't watch it anymore.
Oh, Stargate, yeah. SG-1.
So, I have no problem with a little bit of seriousness added in. But I think also part of the problem, Stargate Universe had some really top-notch actors, and then they had a bunch of boring actors, and they didn't really gel.
But the problem is they didn't have a bunch of top-notch writers servicing those top-notch actors.
Okay, I'll give you some of that.
And it's also, you know, they changed the day that it was shown, which, you know, there are things that even sci-fi says that there were issues with. And they just kept losing and losing and losing viewership. But again, how can you tell? Since it's Nielsen, and none of us have ever met a Nielsen family.
All right, let's move on before we get on a rant, because I feel a rant coming. the other news is Torchwood casting news. I know it's sort of news that's not spoilery, but I don't know if you guys have heard yet, but you know that with the new Torchwood, A New World... we're getting 4 new cast members, and they've cast 2 of them, and they're sort of big names, so I'm kind of... I wasn't expecting that. Bill Pullman is going to be playing the main villain for the season.
Oh, he's the... I did not know.
Yeah, he's the villain. Yeah, because he's the big criminal who's semi-reformed, but I think he's going to be their big nemesis.
Oh, interesting.
He's really he's supposed to be this really powerful guy.
Yeah, but you look at him and you just go, oh, how cute. What a sweetheart. I mean, isn't he the guy?
I don't know.
While you were sleeping and all that?
Well, I think he can maybe play. He can play. He's a well enough seasoned actor.
He's always had a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, I think he can do it.
I think as a charming sociopath, oh yeah.
Yeah, he can pull that off. And then the head CIA agent who's going to be on the team is going to be played by Mekhi Phifer.
Yeah, get a brother in there.
I was a little surprised by the casting news because I think when they had like the short list of the people they said who's going to get the role, it was white guys.
Yep.
And so it's like, okay. But I'm not complaining because I like Mekhi Phifer.
You know what's interesting is two things I noted. One, that somebody is still confusing Bill Pullman with Bill Paxton.
Okay.
Because they were wondering how he was going to juggle Torchwood with Big Love, which is already done, by the way. And the other thing is, Mekhi Phifer, there was speculation, will he be more than, you know, his relationship with Jack?
Oh, yeah.
I have said, let the slash begin. I can just see it starting now.
I don't know, but the thing about Mekhi Phifer, I don't get the flirting with Jack vibe from him. No.
I think it was the other way around.
Yeah, Jack would definitely be flirting, but yeah. I don't, I'm not seeing chemistry there.
I don't see any chemistry. I see more like, thank you, go away. That's very nice of you. No. That's the kind of thing
you have to... there would have to be a very... have to be a very firm no. Anyway, all right, let's move on to the shows. And I hope you guys enjoyed that Leverage interview that we posted. And now we're going to actually talk about the episode, which was their very Christmassy episode of Leverage. And I think I said last week, I'm sick and tired of Christmas episodes. This week, it wasn't quite as bad as it could have been, like the other Christmas episodes were just god-awful. It was weird because, not Hardison, what's her name? Parker. Parker's whole deal was she was acting like she thought Santa Claus was real, but then not. So she was like, we have to help Santa Claus.
What's up with that theme this year?
Yeah, that they have, and especially the blonde chicks always think that Santa Claus is really real.
Reinforce those stereotypes.
Last year they showed that she really didn't have a childhood and she really didn't have a teenagehood.
Right.
But are they trying to show she's retarded? Because every time she's the simpleton when she's not, but they write her as a simpleton.
Right. And I think I'm going to choose that Parker was super enthusiastic about Christmas and Santa Claus because she didn't have a childhood, so she's kind of trying to fake it.
Or overcompensate.
She's trying to overcompensate right now. And I'll buy that.
Okay, I'll try that.
Because I didn't get the feeling that they were really trying to say that she believed that guy was Santa Claus. She was just like, I want to help him because he looks like Santa Claus. But Will Wheaton rocked my socks with the whole supervillain chaos. And he actually outsmarted them for most of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really good. I was like, look at you try to play chess against these guys. And he did a great fake out. I liked it.
He's good as evil Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
When he's doing that, yeah, it works out quite well. He jokes around about how he likes his alter ego. He can do all the things that he really doesn't do in real life, where he's really a nice guy. He likes doing evil Will Wheaton wherever he can.
And this character was like one step away. He was a little more evil than evil Will Wheaton because he was a bank robber. But it was pretty good, and I liked just the roles that everybody had to play. And they blew up the van. That was sad. Will Wheaton blew up his van and hit it with an impulse, so all the cool toys and technobobs or whatever all got blown up.
But he said he was going to buy him a new one.
Yeah, but I was a little sad. So I'd say overall it was one of the better Christmas episodes. Even though everybody was running around dressed as Santa Claus as the criminals, it's still, I think, because it's strangely the heist or whatever didn't depend on a Santa Claus-y thing exactly. They were outsmarting each other. It felt like chess.
I
was like, all right, I like the episode. So, thumbs up.
I agree. It's like every show has to have the episode about why not to do drugs or not to drink or don't do this or don't do that. And then they all have to have the Christmassy episode about, you know, why we're a good world and all that. Yeah, I wonder what the next must-have is going to be that we'll all get sick and tired of soon, too.
It used to be that only shows that had been around for a while would do the Christmas episode. And I thought, well, one of the shows we're going to talk about soon had a Christmas episode their first season, which I thought was, well, they're kind of
bold?
Yeah, I was going to say ballsy, but...
All right, next thing we want to talk about is Hawaii Five-0.
That was the show.
All right, go ahead.
I was surprised they went to the Christmas episode so soon. That said, and this is a show that I was on the verge of dropping until I found out some friends of mine are going to be writing for it soon. But they finally are advancing the arc plot of the show. So we finally get James Marsters back doing evil.
Yay!
Which only he can do.
However, he cannot do an Irish accent.
No,
but continue.
No. And we finally meet Wolf Hat, who is the big bad.
Ah, yes. So, and James Marshall, who was fearless through all the times we've seen him, we see him scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, nice. I'm just glad that he's not dead. Unfortunately, he's in prison. I don't like him in prison.
Oh, I don't think that, I mean, if you remember the original show, Wofat is like the uber bad guy for the whole series. So I think that the way that they introduced him, and then basically James Marsters is kind of pegged as the, kind of like the John the Baptist type character.
Right.
For, you know, the evil John the Baptist for the big bad for the series. So I think that...
That he's going to break him out?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I watched Hawaii Five-0 when I was a wee child, but I have no recollection of the villain. But I have to say, this show, I was kind of writing it off as a guilty pleasure. It's fun to watch everybody hang out in Hawaii and shirtless and stuff. But this episode I thought was pretty good because it literally links back to the pilot, and there's actually a story.
And
generally speaking, there isn't one.
And Grace Park got to do something.
Yes,
except usually, for look hot in a bikini.
Yes, she's usually the victim, or pretends to be the victim, or sits herself out to be bait, or whatever. And this, well, it was her cousin, you know, and she's like, "I'm gonna do whatever I have to save him." However, I plead with them, stop saying "cuz." I was like, "You guys are not Mexican gangsters. Stop it." So that bothers me. The other thing
you're Koreans playing Hawaiians.
Well, that's the other thing. My other complaint was, just if you are from Korea, China, Japan, that does not make you look like you are Hawaiian. And apparently the casting people on Hawaii 5-0 figure Americans can't tell the difference.
Because they can't.
Well, I can't necessarily tell exactly what country you're from, but I'm like, you're not Hawaiian. Like, you know what I mean? And so everybody, it's just
They immigrated to Hawaii from Korea.
Except that all their other cousins, because when they introduce the rest of their family, they're all Hawaiian. And I'm like,
willing okay. suspension of, oh, come on, just like some of the stunts that McGarrett does in the show. It's like, is this WWE? When he does the flying takedown of Marsters at the end, I'm like, seriously?
That didn't bother me as much. Though Marsters' Irish accent, I'm like, dude, I know you can do a British accent. I know you can do Cockney. I know you can do these other accents. Practice the Irish, please, for the love of God. You know, because, I mean, he's a good actor.
Oh, no, he's a fine actor.
And I just, the accent just throws me off. Anyway.
Now you know how I feel about that other show that you're going to talk about.
All right. The next show we want to talk about is The Closer.
That's the one.
That's very good. You're getting good at this.
Yeah.
Which thankfully did not have a Christmas episode.
Yay.
And I was very...
next week.
Is there next week's episode?
Next week is the Christmas episode.
I spoke too soon.
And understand that they've written the character to also hate the Christmas episode. So you're on even par with that. Yeah.
This week's episode is... What I thought was interesting about it is that it was more about the politics that are going on, which has been going on pretty much all season. So, okay, Brenda doesn't make chief. They give chief because they're like, the chief position is either going to go to a black guy or to a woman because we have to be PC. And it ended up going to the black guy. And I kind of like him, but he seems very stiff. Like, he's very much by the book and stuff.
Well, you can tell.
Gee, a black police captain who's by the book.
And in
never
house?
Seen that
wow.
before.
Yeah, but they actually show him kind of like doing cases with her too, so that's why you get a better idea of him. And they I think they're really kind of fleshing his character out, which I appreciate, because before now we never even saw the police chief. We had no idea who that person was. So it's kind of interesting that they're really developing him this season, but they're doing it all for political moves to make everybody uncomfortable.
Well, absolutely. And there's only going to be one more year
right.
of the show, so this is going to be it, wherever it's going to end up.
They're basically upheaval, because that's what it really looks like. They're setting themselves up for a serious upheaval, and I couldn't figure out where they were going, but now, as you know, it's the last season, they can go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of frees them up, and that's kind of interesting. But man, I feel so bad. My issue, I got so angry at Brenda at the end of the episode because Pope's about to get fired and the police chief wants to have Brenda take Pope's old job, right? And Brenda doesn't want to do it because she feels like it's betrayal. And then her husband, Fritz, is all like, well, why won't you take his job? And she's like, well, I don't want to do that. She's like, you know he's still in love with you. And I was like, what does one thing have to do with the other? And so Fritz, I think, is irrationally jealous. I was like, dude, you won. You got the girl. You got married. She married you. Calm down.
But he can't calm down because, remember, he's a recovering alcoholic. There's always certain things that go on in the back of someone's mind in that situation. And there's still always a paranoia. And he has said it. He has shown it. He has said it.
That's, I mean, I'm
and
not saying.
And she's not, and even before they got married, he can tell her job is more important than her relationships.
That's true.
Her job is more important than her parents. Her job is more important than everything. So if I was him, I would be nervous because if her job is more important, that means there could be a lot of other things more important than him too.
Well, the thing is, the reason I got mad at Brenda, even though at first I was annoyed at Fritz, Fritz isn't blowing smoke. He isn't making it up. Pope does still love her.
Oh, absolutely.
And the thing that irritated me was she was like, okay, I won't take the job, but I'll tell Pope. I'll make sure he knows that there's nothing going on and that I'm not, you know, tell him to back off, whatever. You know, she's like, I'll have the conversation with him. And he was like, well, as long as you have the conversation with him, I'm fine. And she goes into Pope's office and does the absolute opposite.
Oh, she hasn't, but see, she didn't tell him what she was going to say during the discussion.
Oh, she didn't make him back off at all. You know what she totally, completely manipulated him.
Absolutely.
She walked in that room deliberately set on manipulating Pope to get him to do what she wanted.
She does not want to take his job because she doesn't want to leave the job
she has. Well, I understand that too.
And that's all she's looking at, and you're right. I saw the way he looked at her, the way she talked to him. She's using his love of her to stay in a job that he knows he's going to get fired from, that it's better that he leaves now.
It's absolutely better.
Than get fired, but he's going to do it to make her happy, and it's just going to make her happy that she doesn't have the job.
And it's going
to
make him miserable, and the thing that makes me so more angry about it is Brenda, who is one of the strongest women you've seen on television, walks into his office and starts crying.
But she did it on purpose.
I know she did it on purpose. That's why I'm mad.
She used the ability of manipulating people on him, like she does on the criminals. You know, the comment.
And that's what makes me so...
Absolutely.
That's what irritates me. Because
absolutely.
He's supposed to be her friend. He's supposed to be the guy that she cares about.
So you're upset that she worked him.
Oh, she complained. And what irritates me too is... He didn't see it. He's known her for, what, 10 years?
He saw it. He saw it, and he was happy to do it.
You think he saw
it? Oh, the actor, the way he does, he's always done his face.
Oh, he does like five layers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when it's always her or versus her and the what.
But she's getting freaking...
He's willing to. He actually said, I know this is going to end badly for me, but I will do it for you. He knows he's being manipulated. He knows why. He knows she doesn't want the responsibility. She doesn't leave where she is. If he's gone, she will have no choice. It's either going to be somebody, it's either going to be her, or it's going to be someone she doesn't want to work under. So as long as she
I understand.
And he's doing this for her. He knows he's ruining his life for her. Just like he said, he knows he can't leave the state of California for all these fantastic job offers because of his kid.
Right.
And that's number one. Well, you know what? She's number two on his list.
I know.
Over him. And you see it. You see how he's always
And
been.
That's the thing. And I'm a sucker for that romance. It's the unrequited. Because everybody else I ever talk to about the clothes, are they all like Brenda and Fritz? And I'm like, no, I like Brenda and Pope.
But they've already had their time.
I know. But I just... The unrequited aspect, because he's just kind of sitting in the corner over here.
Yeah.
Just pining after her. And I'm like, oh... And I like the episodes where they actually, you know, stress that. Because, yeah, I'm a sucker for that.
That's
anyway.
True.
All right,
so,
moving
yeah.
on. I'm sorry I'm being such a girl. All right. You guys said you wanted to talk about How I Met Your Mother. I think that would be the debut of that show on this podcast because I haven't watched it. So, go forth.
It was a fun episode.
They are all fun episodes. You can't really have a serious episode on a show where one of the leads is trying to seduce every female over the age of 17, up to the age of 82. You know, it's a little difficult, but I enjoy the show. My problem with this week was that it was a little more Ted-centric, and I actually like the show when he's in the background, when he's just the glue for
which,
why they're all
friends.
Which
is interesting, because theoretically, he's the eye of your title, of the title.
How I Met Your Mother.
That's true, but I like all the... That's the thing I had the first year.
Is it just
year.
Me, or are they totally using stock footage of those kids?
Yeah. They haven't grown at all.
Oh, yeah.
The boy has not grown at all.
Yeah, because she's on Nikita.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't look the same as she does on How I Met Your Mother.
If you notice, they don't talk. The kids don't talk. They make facial movements, and that's about it.
They
and
nod.
A few hand moves. Yeah.
They're getting residuals, though.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The only thing that I think that's good about that show is Barney. That's it. Oh, I love, the rest I love, of the show is a waste
I love that they brought Ben Vereen back.
Yes.
As a...
Son. No, not really son.
Expression. No, it's just... I don't know. I think this is season 6. It's time to really start at least hinting about who the mother is.
But they have hinted. What is it, 2 years ago?
Yeah, the mother that was 2 years ago.
Well, the mother was a roommate of someone. And besides, she's supposed to be in his class.
Yeah. But so, why do we keep getting these distractions? Like, as much as I like Jennifer Morris, and then I know a lot of the house people who miss her there, like seeing her, the whole thing with her and Kyle MacLachlan is just kind of... Huh?
And that's why I don't like it when it's Ted-centric. I find it to be extremely boring.
You like it to be about everybody else.
Yes. I like the idea that he's the glue that has everyone together. I love the other storylines. You know, careers and family and children now or later and all that. I love that stuff. Ted is a big baby, and if he was one of my friends, I think we all know who he would be the person.
Oh!
And I'm not saying that. But the one that can always meet girls and always have a great time has a problem with relationships.
Let's not get more specific.
No, it's just that's the kind of guy that's out there, but he really isn't the reason to watch a show. The reason is all the friends around who all their craziness with their lives, and I get a kick out of that. I really really do. Now, of course, speaking of Ben Vereen, it'd be really cool, you know, if they have like Bob Barker come and. That would be so cool. You know, do a charity thing or go to LA or something like that. But then again, that's me ever hopeful.
Did they have him on before?
They just showed him on the television. They really...
Oh, they didn't show him in...
Well, Barney went and he was on the show.
Right.
But it wasn't like part of the storyline. Right. It was just he went to the show.
Okay. All right. Next show we want to talk about is NCIS. And apparently I'm the only one who watched it this week. But that's okay. I want to talk about it really quick because this was a strange episode in that it wasn't Christmas. Well, it slightly was Christmas at the very end. But it was strange because Tony is acting out of character for the entire episode. And you don't understand why. I mean, and when I say he's acting out of character, I mean, all of a sudden he's super professional. He combs his hair different. He's stoic. He's never smiling. And I'm like, what the heck? Has he been replaced by a pod person? You know, it's like, what's going on? And actually, that's kind of the thing, is the rest of the team, they all wonder what's going on with him. And they think he's been replaced by a pod person. Actually, what they think is he's setting them up for some sort of joke. And they're waiting. They're all tense, waiting for the punchline. And he's like, yeah, there's no punchline. And they're like, what the heck is happening? And then you find out that apparently, he feels responsible for the death of somebody. I can't even remember specifically what it was. But he felt that somebody died and it was his fault. Or he felt guilty about something. And I know I'm getting it wrong. And so, that was his response, was to be super serious and to change who he was to be more professional. Because he felt like if he was more professional, like he was anticipating people's needs and making Xeroxes and doing stuff like way faster than everybody else. And they were like, dude, you're making us look bad. And, I mean, it also confirmed what I've always suspected, which is when it's important, Tony can be super professional and get the job done. But then they had this little heart-to-heart to him, and they were like, well, we like you being goofy and funny, and that's what we love about you, so don't stop. That was good, but it was so strange, because Gibbs, who's always stoic and always, you know, on point, doesn't really pay any attention to their antics, he was confused. He was just, like, looking at Tony like, what the heck happened to you? He never said anything. He never actually commented. Well, actually, he almost commented. Oh, he said good job to Tony twice in one day, which is, like, he says good job to Tony, like, once every 6 months. So the fact that he said it twice in one day, like, threw him off. He was like, wait a minute. Didn't I just say that to you already? Huh. And so then he walks away. But that's about the most that he says about it. But I'd say that was the main thing I wanted to talk about, just how bizarre that was. And I'm not quite sure what they were trying to say about his character. Though they had the big, deep Ziva conversation where Ziva and Tony had the in-depth, you know, how are you feeling, and caring conversation, which I really don't want them to get together. Which is, you know, I'm this big sap for relationships. I do not want Tony and Ziva to get together. I've said it. All right. But yeah, it's a good episode. I don't remember exactly. Oh, the other thing I forgot was the guy that they are protecting in this episode is so strange. He's got this like weird special power, though they say he was raised by psychologists. That's why they say he has the special power. But like he would talk to each one of the team, and he would basically just analyze their character down to the deepest level, and to the point where they were all uncomfortable being around him, and they were supposed to be protecting him, and like no one wanted to be in the room with him. So like with Polly is her real name.
Abby,
thank you, because I was like blanking. He walked into Abby's office and he was like, well, how come you're not dating McGee anymore? Is it because you feel that he's too good for you and that he would be that he's the one and he's the last relationship that you're probably ever going to be in, but you're afraid to go there? And he's just like totally breaking down all this stuff, and Abby's just looking at him and like, you need to leave my office now. She didn't tell him he was wrong. She was just like, you need to leave. And then he broke down Gibbs and was telling him like exactly what was underneath all his layers of stoicism, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to get some coffee and go away from you right now. Like, it was pretty good. I liked it. Anyway. Next show up we're going to talk about is Psych. Double episode.
One of which was a Christmas episode, the other of which was a winter episode.
Yes, the Christmas episode, again, I thought was crap.
Let's just... I declare a moratorium. No more Christmas Carol homages. No more It's a Wonderful Life homages. No more Grinch homage. Just, like, take those. If you're going to do a Christmas episode, you cannot use any of those as your touchstone.
Except that I think that's what Doctor Who's going to do. They're doing Christmas Carol. Yeah, Christmas Carol.
I'm sure that they'll be much more clever than we.
Somehow I don't think we'll have to worry about the Grinch. Because I don't believe the Grinch will be in that time period.
Yeah.
And, you know, from people who have actually seen it, they said it's the best that they of the.
Let's not. Okay, but
so yes. I think that's something we're not going to have to worry as much about. But you're right; they've got to stop. It's like nobody knows how to write a story about the holiday.
It's lazy, right? I mean,
it is.
And this one was written by,
co-written by James Roday.
Yeah.
And directed by him.
Yes, and he should stop writing the episodes of this, because well, I actually haven't noticed other ones that he's written, so this is only my first one I've had to judge that I'm thinking about it, and I just really didn't like it. Every joke was just not funny.
I don't think the problem was his writing. I think the problem was when you're ripping off It's a Wonderful Life / A Christmas Carol, there's only so many places you can go with it.
Right. It just didn't work. Yeah.
It's, you know...
I gave that one a total thumbs down. It was just not funny and nothing. The second one
was fun.
Yeah, the second one was fun. Polar bear. What'd you say?
With the polar bear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right. I loved the fact that Burton was, or Gus was, afraid of the bear to the point of, well, they always make him afraid of different stuff. Yeah. But this one I thought I was justified, actually. I was like, I would have been with
it's
you, man.
It's a freaking bear.
Exactly.
I don't care how cute it is.
Yes, I would have been with him.
I don't care how many Coca-Cola jokes you make. It's a bear.
All that stuff was really good, and trying to figure out who framed the bear and all that stuff, the mystery of that was all pretty good. And then, Lassiter's sisters. That was great.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I thought that was fun, the little thing with Gus, that Lassie actually got to solve the case.
Right. Yeah.
Which, Psych, I mean, the key to Psych is they're having a really good time.
Exactly.
So even if it's not the deepest, well, none of the mysteries are incredibly deep.
No.
But it's all about, I like these guys and women, and I want them in my house for an hour at a time,
right,
every week.
And I agree. And this episode totally accomplished that. I like the fact that Sean and Juliet's relationship is not distracting. It's there. Everybody
it's
there, knows
it,
that they're dating.
Except Lassie
doesn't know.
No, he does not.
Lassie's the only one who doesn't
know.
Because
he's Mr. Oblivious.
Right. But I like their relationship is there and does not affect the plot. I'm happy that they're a couple. Let's leave it alone. I like Gus. Just everybody, all the chemistry was right there, and just the dialogue too in this episode was great. And he was like, "Get your little blue whatever. What do they call his car? His little blue."
I forget.
Lassie has all great names for everything. And everybody was like so surprised that his sister was like a nice person. Oh, oh, and Gus was inappropriately hitting on her.
Well, I love the one scene where Gus looks at her and sees Lassie.
Yeah.
After the whole episode of hitting on her.
Yeah. All that was great. And I like that Sean was like, "It's weird if you hit on Lassie's sister." He's like, "Why? She's pretty." And he's like, "But that means she's part Lassie." And it was just so, like, all that stuff made no sense but was amusing. So yeah, thumbs up for the second one. Very good. Next up, we want to talk about is Human Target.
You know, I was leery of this season because I had heard that because of pressure that they had added two new female characters.
Right.
I like Indira Varma as
their
new boss.
Fantastic.
She's great. The Thief, not completely sold on, and she's not in every episode, which is good. But it hasn't really messed with the chemistry.
No,
of the
it's
show.
Actually added to the chemistry. I love Indira
Varma.
I love her chemistry with
Chance
and with Guillermo. Like the two, like the episode this last week, she's stuck in a car with him, and he's like, she gave him a check for his paycheck. He's like, I don't take checks.
Oh, that was great.
And she's like, "Well, you know, you have to pay taxes on your check." She's like, "No, I don't. He's like, "I only do cash." And she's trying to make fun of him about it. And then at the end of the day, you know, when she ends up in a situation, she's running for her life and she didn't have any cash. He's like, "What, I'm going to have to spot you?" Like, all that was just great. You know, and he's being super sarcastic, but he's taking care of her. You know, and what's funny is I didn't really like Guillermo's character in season one. I thought that he was too shady.
Well, he was shady and abrasive, and you weren't really supposed to like him.
But I love him now. I absolutely love him in the second season. He's great. And it's just like, the whole episode was really good because they got in trouble. Oh, because it was all about Chief McBride's, you know, his original case. And they're like, "Dude, we got your back." And they had his back so far that they were all running from the police. You know, so that was really good, just showing where everybody's loyalty was and, you know, what they're willing, how far they're willing to go and that kind of thing. But, yeah, Indira's a great addition because I think they might be going with the Chance and her chemistry. I'm not sure. Like, I saw the last episode where they were together, I felt the vibe. I was like, "Are they doing that?" I don't know.
I don't know if that's something that the actors have found or if...
There was some chemistry going on.
Yeah, there's something there, but I don't know if or... It's fascinating for a show like that, especially with first season of the show, you would... With first season of the show, you would think that they would have a quote-unquote love interest.
Right.
And obviously they would have, you know, a disproportionate amount of attractive female clients.
Right.
But obviously, Chance was not interested in really in
Indira. Yeah, because he was just in a dark place.
He was in a dark place, professional. But bringing her in opens up possibilities.
Right. And and her husband died somewhat recently.
It's been a while.
Did he die at the beginning of the season?
I thought, well, in the first episode, which was titled after her character. Weren't they sent to kind of avenge his death or investigate?
Something like that. Whoever killed her husband was after her. So
right,
was
right.
So, but, and it had been a while because she'd been looking for
Correct.
Him for like months.
Correct.
So that's true. So it's probably been maybe 2 years or something. Because I was just trying to think, has it been not long enough since her husband's death? But I think she's fascinated by him. I think she really is fascinated by him and what he does. And she's disgusted in that he used to be an assassin, but she's fascinated in that how far he's willing to go to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think she's intrigued.
It's kind of interesting because this, at least the basic setup, bears a lot in Equalizer, which was a classic 80s show, and Burn Notice, which we have to talk about the finale, also bears, owes a lot to that.
Right.
But how they approach a similar premise from completely different angles.
Yeah.
And
I didn't think, when I watched first season, I thought the show was okay. Now I love it.
Yeah, I think the this is one of those rare cases where the tinkering worked. Did improve. Although I do not like the new theme song. I thought Barry McCreary's first season theme song was, it was very unlike most of his other compositions for TV, but it was appropriately heroic. And now they have this weird kind of Mission Impossible wannabe, you know, generic spy show theme song.
I didn't actually notice. I did notice that it's longer because they have more cast members.
Actually, it's about the same length.
Is it? It felt like it was longer.
No. Well, that's because it's...
Because it's the music?
It's the music. Because it's not good.
All right. I'd say thumbs up for this week's episode. Oh, and the bad guy I have to mention, shout out, he played Toomes from The X-Files. Is that Toomes? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
He's always a villain. He's a great villain. I've never seen that guy play a good guy. But he's very good at playing the bad guy. All right. Next up, we had a two-part finale of Burn Notice. Cool. And I have to say I was absolutely, absolutely surprised that they actually solved the whole Burn Notice thing. I was like, really?
What do you mean by solve the whole? You mean the list or?
Well, at the end of the episode, he's not burned anymore. They welcome him back to the CIA.
But that doesn't make sense. I watched that because I'm thinking, but is, and I go, does this mean it's the end of the show?
No.
I think there's more.
I know there's going to be more, obviously, because there's another season.
We've got 2 hours and you
I've skipped to the end.
You skipped to the end.
Yes.
I thought the part one with bringing back Larry.
It felt like a bizarre Burn Notice reunion. Like, every free character that was out there, they brought them all back for this episode. It was so weird. But Larry is great. He is... I want to see Larry again.
Everyone's favorite sociopath. No, he's a sociopath.
Right. I like the fact... The thing that's weird about him, he's got this clingy nature that he really wants Michael to be just like him. He really, really wants him to... He wants a partner in crime. He wants... That companionship.
It reminds me of Harvey Firestein. I just want to be loved. Is that so wrong?
Yeah, it's like, well, he doesn't just want to be loved. He wants Michael to be him. He wants basically to have a partner in his psychosis.
He wants Michael to be his protege/partner.
Well, I mean, just being his protege isn't good enough. He wants to travel with him and to be with him. That's a little slash, you're asking me.
It's like he wants to be in a bromance with Michael, and Michael's like, check please.
I know, he really wants that. He's like, but we could travel together and kill people together. It'll be great. And Michael's like, no. And so then he literally blackmails him and threatens his entire family. He's like, if you don't come with me, then I'm going to kill them all. And you have to come with me because then I'll make you like me. I'll make you better, and I'll let your inner self out. And I was just like, I felt like we were in a bizarre romance novel. I was like, what's going on?
What's the name of the character? He was played by the guy from The Shield.
I called him the guy from The Shield. That was Dutch.
Dutch from The Shield. You knew that Larry was going to backstab him.
Well, the thing is, both of them are psychopaths, so I knew one of them was going to kill the other. I just didn't know which way that was going to go.
See, I think Dutch is a psychopath, Larry's a sociopath, which is why Larry ends up sticking the knife in Dutch's chest.
I don't understand how either one of them function, because they're just both super, super crazy. And Michael was just like, and I'm in between both of these crazy people.
It's the Scylla and Charybdis.
But... All of that was, but it's just like, I like the way that they built the pressure of the two-parter. Like, in the first part, you get the first guy who's a psychopath. Then they bring in Larry. And then they threaten with Vaughn. So he's just like, holy crap. Like, every person that he's ticked off in the last few years are all
converging
on him at the same time. And he's like... Like, I only have so many plans to think up at the same time.
For some reason, I was starting to think of the Doctor Who finale when
all the villains
have conspired. It's like, oh my gosh, Burn Notice is doing Doctor Who. I love, love, love that Madeline has been central to the action this year.
Yes. Even though she got hurt, I was very scared. I don't like her getting hurt.
But she's a tough broad.
Oh, she is.
And I love that... I had my misgivings about Jesse at the beginning of the season, which are documented many podcasts ago. But man, I love Jesse. I love that Jesse gets that he'll never have a chance with Fiona because she and Michael have this special relationship.
Right. Because he made an inquiry. He didn't quite make a play.
Oh no, he made a query.
He made a query. He was like, "So you and Michael are having problems? Like, what's going on?" Because he totally is in love with Fee.
He is totally infatuated with her.
And
Madeline was the one who told him, "Don't go there."
Yeah, yeah, and he knows. He knows. And as much as Michael tries to act like he and Fee are just kind of casual, the whole standoff at the end was
Which Cassidy style.
Yeah, it was like, she was like, you know what? I'd rather... He set it up so she could escape, and she started to run, and she was like, I'd rather die with him. And she ran back in there. He's like, what are you doing? She's like, we're doing this together. And I was like, oh, I actually got all teary at their big standoff with the bomb. I was like, oh, I knew they weren't going to die, but I was still a little, you know. And it's just like, that actually solidified their relationship more than anything else that they've done. Because as much as Fee complains about, you know, his life and his what he's doing.
And his insane desire to want to get back into the
Her whole thing is she wants, if he's a spy, he's going to be traveling and he can't really be with her. So that's really her main complaint. And I like the fact that Jesse broke it down. He's just like, you wouldn't have gone after someone like Michael if you wanted a picket fence.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, suck it up.
I was sorry. Was this the? No, I guess Marv had died before the two.
Yeah, Marv died last week.
That was no. This season has been. I think this has been my favorite season since one.
Yeah, this has just been a lot. Well, first of all, because stuff happened.
Yes, they've been. It didn't feel other seasons. It felt like you're spinning gears exactly. Or you're neutral. But this one, they really have advanced the plot line.
Yeah, absolutely.
The arc plot story.
I was really impressed. And that list, man, it's like once they got a hold of that list, it felt like they were sacrificing everything for it. And that was really good. It took them down to the bone. And I thought that was really good.
He totally gave that to Fiona.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure.
Yeah, because they took him, and because Jesse gives it to him, mm-hmm. And then these guys show up, we have to go, we have to question you. And he hugs and kisses Fiona. I was like, oh, he totally slipped it in her pocket.
Yeah, totally.
There's no way he would have walked off with those guys with the list, and he didn't know who they were. So yeah, I'm sure that he gave it to Fee. But then now, you know, it ends with their big cliffhanger is that Michael has been taken back into the CIA, and there's like,
has he? That's not where Langley is.
Well, someplace in DC.
As somebody with who's lived in DC with the working geography of DC.
Well, the thing is, remember that
it's not Langley.
They always said that he doesn't officially work for the CIA. He works sort of. Because somebody's like, are you CIA? And he's like, not exactly. So you'd assume that his home building is not necessarily in the same place. My whole thing is they said, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been trying to get back to this forever. But now it means his life is... He kind of got used to the way his life has been.
I'll be interested to see what exactly this means for the direction of season 5.
Right, well, they blew up... They said he's not going back to his loft again. Because they're like, oh, you're probably not going to see this loft again. They blew up his car. Which made me cry a little bit. So yeah, it looks like next season is going to be all different.
I wonder if this has to do with the fact that Florida's film incentives.
I have no idea. Because you think we're going to move the whole show to DC? That would be weird. I don't like that. I like Miami.
I mean, at least, you know, do the LA thing and shoot it in LA and go to Miami for B-roll 3 times a year.
Something. All right, the last show we want to talk... Well, just to be clear, thumbs up for the finale of Burn Notice. It's the best finale they've had.
Absolutely. All right.
And moving on to Big Bang. Go ahead.
I like everyone except... Who's the... Sheldon. I still say I don't like Sheldon, but I love everyone around.
Sheldon,
you're not supposed to like Sheldon.
I don't like the way they write him. I don't like a lot of that kind of stuff. But I loved the show this week. I thought it was adorable.
Sheldon's my favorite character.
Well, okay. Well, hey, that's why we're here discussing.
Yeah. I was surprised they brought. Is it Zach?
Yeah, that guy's an idiot. Yeah,
I'm surprised they brought him back.
Yeah, because he's like a one-off from last week. And this week, oh, that whole thing where they were basically calling him stupid in front of his face was just, it was funny, but then it did start to feel cruel. Like,
I'm glad they got caught on it.
Yeah. The bullying, that it's a reverse bullying.
It was, not reverse bullying, well, it's just bullying.
Well, yeah, instead of the strong guys going after the smart guys, it's the smart guys going after the strong guys, because they're stupid.
Well, he was really dumb, though.
Yeah, but he also, but he liked being with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he loved the idea of doing the costumes and stuff, and he just, he wanted to be one of them, which is kind of scary. It's kind of like going to Comic-Con where, you know, all the cool kids now want to be us.
I thought it was kind of interesting just in terms of if you're on the outside of a group, you want to be inside the group.
No matter what the group is.
I wonder if they're going to keep Zach around, if it was just, you know, a two-off or...
Well, I think
it'd be fun to see him recur. Because also, I thought one of the main points in the arc story is Leonard's reaction to seeing Penny with him.
Right.
She'd rather be with this moron than with me.
Except they know that she's not intimate with him.
Right. Well. And she's also...
And she's intimate with everybody.
She has been intimate.
Yeah, she's changed. Leonard has totally changed her. Yes. She's not the same girl. Also, she also has been around the guys long enough to figure out that the people she used to date were pretty stupid.
I love the episode with her dad.
Yeah,
that was brilliant. And especially when he begged, please. I can't take any more of these morons. Keith Carradine, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Brilliant.
And
brilliant.
He, I like the fact that they're actually hinting. Even though I didn't really necessarily like Leonard and Penny together,
it was too soon.
Yeah, I actually like her angst now that she realizes that she let a good one go, and she doesn't know what to do about it.
I think they're gonna have to play that old. So he's gonna find somebody, you know, the whole reverse romantic tango thing.
But they've already, established that she regrets. Usually, the guy has to start dating somebody else, and then she realizes that she regrets it. They've already played that card. She already does regret it, and she feels bad, and she kind of wants him back, but she's also scared. And I like that they're playing all those emotions.
But I like that they're taking their time. Mm. I mean, they've got a full season to do this, not just a couple of episodes.
Yeah, and that's all good. And I like that they have a girls group now so that the girls can actually talk about their issues.
And I get so scared by that one.
So okay, what?
She's talking about Sheldon's girl.
Amy Farrah Fowler.
Because I know this is going to sound gross, but during the episode where she kind of had an interest in Zach.
I want to see her hook up with Zach.
But all I could think
was, I think that would be awesome.
Do you remember her comment about how she always wears a tampon just to be prepared for her period? That went through my mind. Oh my God, just a few other things went through my mind, and she scares me. She's
hilarious.
I
love that as the female Sheldon, or what was the Shamey?
Shamey.
As half of Shamey, she has no inner censor whatsoever.
No.
And just the whole episode where basically Zach was, that's the one.
No, I like the whole, you know, it's like, where would I have picked up an alien parasite? You know, all of that was really good.
Yeah.
But this week's episode, I thought that Leonard going over to talk to Penny and getting her to wear the Wonder Woman
costume.
Yeah. Like, he didn't realize what he had said that convinced her. You know, like he's still clueless about how she feels about him.
Yeah.
But I think that there's more mileage to be gained by taking it slow.
Oh, absolutely.
And exploring all the... I mean, I really want to see Zach, and I want Amy to get drunk and end up with Zach, and then Sheldon... I want to see the reaction Sheldon has.
No, but he tried to hook her up with Zach, remember?
He tried, but I think he's in denial that he does have some kind of affection for her.
I don't think so. I think he just figures that it's never going to go anywhere.
I don't know. That's the thing is, Sheldon is like an alien. I don't know what he's feeling.
Well, they said that they were initially tempted to make him asexual, that he's just, you know.
Well, that's pretty much how they're doing now.
Yeah.
But I think it would be interesting if he is forced to confront what kind of feelings he does or does not have for
Amy. He has some sort of feelings for her. He does have some kind. But they're not of a sexual nature.
And she sure doesn't for him, mm-mm, because she didn't make that noise for him.
No. But I think it's really interesting. I'll be very interested. Especially, did you notice in the writing credits that five of the writers worked on that episode? Which leads me to believe that it might be a little bit more pivotal than we think.
Oh, okay. That's all good. I mean, I like when they have good story arcs on Big Bang.
But I think that it could be an interesting 2011 for our favorite geeks.
And I think that would be really nice.
And please get Kutcher Polly some kind of action.
And
what's with dissing Aquaman? Oh my god.
Okay, well,
Aquaman does suck though. Sorry.
I kind of like Aquaman.
He sucked when you realized that the costume came with the seahorse. Okay, so now I too was like, well, what's wrong with wearing a costume that has the fake muscles underneath and the wig? And oh my god, it's a seahorse. Oh, I feel so bad for him now. Now I understand why he'd rather wear the Wonder Woman outfit.
But you know, that's what they're also hinting at. They've been hinting a while that he might be a little gay.
No, I don't think he is. I'll tell you who he's going to have to end up with. He's going to have to end up with a deaf woman.
Oh,
I'm serious. Because if you talk about a relationship, that's the only time it won't make a difference that he can't talk in front of a woman.
How about that episode where he and Bernadette were flirting?
No, I'm not saying that he doesn't flirt with women. But his relationship with Wallowitz is past bromance, man.
Oh, well, that's the same episode where
well, they said, let's have a threesome, and he was like, all right. Yeah, like I'm saying, and the fact that he wants to dress up as Wonder Woman, and he's red, Eat, Pray, Love, and they basically are hinting, they made him more feminine than any of the other guys. So
in that respect, yes, but again, I don't see that as being a potential. I think he's like a lot of guys who are just scared shitless of being around women. But as long as he doesn't have to talk, he can do everything else. So that's why, I mean, I'm joking around about it, but I can just see if they do get him a love interest, it's going to be someone who's deaf. Because then when he just does nothing, they're not going to care.
Okay, Marcia has now trademarked that idea.
Right. Bring in Marley Matlin.
Oh, she's too good for him.
Or the woman Shoshana from Jericho.
Oh right,
oh, yeah, okay.
I remember.
She's all right.
We're wrapping up this week's episode. Next week will be an interesting thing because we have like no shows to talk about. We're gonna do a special for Doctor Who. Just for their Christmas special, and hopefully I won't want to shoot my brains out when I see it.
Can I say a little something? It's kind of news, but also it's about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
The difference between how BBC/BBC America likes to promote their flagship shows versus how American networks have no concept. The Sun newspaper, I was actually wrong, it was Saturday's paper, came out with a free Doctor Who DVD, including a 14-day Christmas guide, and this was all for 30 pence. It included The End of Time, Parts 1 and 2, The 11th Hour, and that's the entire run of the newspaper. And here you can't even get FX to promote a show like Terriers. So,
which I didn't even know was on until it was canceled.
Absolutely. So again, when I watch, this is my little also thing to say is, when I watch the commercials for sci-fi and they say, imagine better, I automatically say BBC.
Ah, nice.
And so I'm looking forward to Doctor Who next week.
Yay. All right. Happy holidays, guys. Have a good break. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Merry Christmas.